From Inside Higher Ed, this is This Week at Inside Higher Ed, the informed and essential conversation about the week's news in higher education. This Week is made possible through the generous support of our sponsors, ACT, Barnes & Noble College, Intel Corporation, Lumina Foundation, Oracle, and 2U.
Greetings from This Week at Inside Higher Ed. This past week in Orlando, the members of Higher Education's Technology Tribes gathered for the annual EDUCAUSE Conference. And our conversation today will focus on the EDUCAUSE Conference and the larger issue about the ubiquity of information technology in higher education. This is Casey Green. I'm the moderator for This Week at Inside Higher Ed, where we go behind and beyond the news to provide the informative and engaging conversation about what really matters in higher education. So welcome all. Ahead of our conversation today, please note you can post your thoughts about these conversations on the comments section of the This Week page, insidehighered.com/thisweek. Let's talk about EDUCAUSE. This past week in Orlando, as we said, higher education officials, CIOs, other campus IT personnel, plus some faculty and campus administrators who are concerned about IT issues, as well as a large number of representatives from the firms that provide technology and digital content resources to the higher ed market, convened for the annual EDUCAUSE conference. The three-day conference was marked by several plenary sessions, hundreds of concurrent conference sessions, and a large exhibit area. Joining us for the conversation about EDUCAUSE and the ubiquity of IT in higher education are Joshua Kim, the Director of Digital Learning Initiatives at the Dartmouth Center for Advancement of Learning. Joshua also scribes the Technology and Learning blog for Inside Higher Ed. Teresa Rowe, the CIO at Oakland University in Michigan, moderates the EDUCAUSE CIO listserv. She is also the recipient of a 2014 EDUCAUSE Community Leadership Award. Karen Stout is the president of Montgomery County Community College in Pennsylvania, and Scott Jasek is the co-founder and co-editor of Inside Higher Ed. My thanks to you all for joining us. Karen Stout, let me turn to you. You're a college president. Why go to EDUCAUSE?
Well, this was my first EDUCAUSE, and I've had EDUCAUSE on my to-do list for a number of years, and this year the timing of the conference was perfect. And we are in the midst of a number of important decisions at Montgomery County Community College, and I'm sure across the country we're seeing technology as a disruptor in the way that we deliver education. And I thought it was important for me to be in the middle of the conversation with my team, with my IT team, and I also have faculty there to see firsthand the trends, to meet with vendors and look at the products in action, to learn some best practices, to support my team, my IT team. Technology is also a major area of emerging area of risk management on our campuses, so as a CEO, I wanted to learn more about that. And from a pragmatic perspective, we're getting ready to make some major investments at Montgomery in e-commerce tools, new CRM tool, and we have we're in the iPass project with the Gates Foundation, and we're trying to blend three vendors' products to provide better analytics about students and their pathway through our institution. So I really wanted to see all three vendors in one place, look them in the eye, and see whether they were able to deliver for us what they have said that they think they can deliver. And I thought that was important from a presidential perspective to be there, to show them how important that work was to the success of the college and our students.
Teresa Rowe, you're a CIO at a large institution. A number of your colleagues go with teams. Karen mentioned she wanted to go with her team. A lot of institutions do that. Does that typically work out, that you send folks and they kind of fan out and they come back and aggregate what they've learned between the sessions and the vendor conversations?
Yes, I think that's a very valuable way to extend the conversation that starts at EDUCAUSE. One area that I've tried to include is our purchasing department. Touring the vendor floor, meeting with vendors with our purchasing agent or discussing what she found from the vendor floor has been a very rewarding way for us to approach the conference. We need to find ways to extend the discussion, and having a core group that reviews the whole conference and then brings back ideas is a great way to do that.
Joshua Kim, you get to wander the landscape. You're there in part representing Dartmouth, and you're also there as a blogger for Inside Higher Ed. What do you take away from the conference? Or how do you prepare for the conference going in, and what do you see as you're there? What do you look for?
Sure, Casey. Well, I think we can all say that we really start going to EDUCAUSE for the content, for the sessions. And the reason that we keep coming back to EDUCAUSE is for the relationships, for the discussions. I think the problem that at least I'm running into with EDUCAUSE is when the vibe of the conference gets so out of whack with the realities of higher education that I've been coming to EDUCAUSE for so many years. And this year, I really found the kind of cheerleading around technology somewhat strange given the persistent challenges we have as a nation with higher education. So I'm really asking myself now, do I really want to keep coming back to EDUCAUSE? I don't know.
Scott Jassett from Inside Higher Ed, you cover EDUCAUSE, you and folks at Inside Higher Ed cover EDUCAUSE as a journalist, you know, from a journalistic perspective. What is it that's significant that occurs in this annual gathering of the IT tribe?
Well, you see everybody there who's in the tech world and the various companies that are in the tech world. But I wanted to pick up on sort of what Karen said. I think it's great that a president is there. But what struck me this year and in past years is who's not there. Increasingly at EDUCAUSE, the discussions aren't just about technology, but about, as Josh was saying, how technology is supposed to help us with some of the most difficult educational challenges facing colleges today. And I am struck by how few faculty or academic administrator side people are there. And you'll be in a room and someone will say, this tool will do X, and I scan the room, and I don't see anyone in the rank and file faculty who could say, yes, that makes sense, or it'll never work. And so I worry about who's not there.
All right. Let's talk about who was there. And Clay Christensen was at EDUCAUSE. He was the keynote speaker, the opening speaker on the first day of the conference. There's a lot of conversation about Christensen and his disruption theory. There have been some stuff, for example, in the New York Times earlier this year about sort of internal tensions at Harvard as they figure out their online education strategy, and it seems to be it's Michael Porter versus Clay Christensen. There was a critical piece in the New Yorker about disruption theory. And even within the higher education community, some of the things that Christensen was advocating or warning about, such as the MOOCs in his keynote presentation, seem to be diminishing in terms of their presence or the concern. Has the disruption moment passed? Karen Stout, you're a president. Has the disruption moment passed, or is it still loom large?
I'm not sure if it's passed. I mean, what I try to do with Clay Christensen's work is customize it and make it practical for the way that I lead. And I look at the disruption theories, and I look at a theory around sustaining innovation. And I think all of our campuses have pockets of potential disruptive activities. And even more importantly, we have pockets of work that's more around sustaining innovation. And I think it's just important that we use that framing and his thinking on our campuses and think about, you know, how are we trying to change the student experience along, you know, one axis, and then along the other axis, how is that potentially transforming the business model or the delivery model we're using? And use that to frame our work and to push it out. So, for example, under disruptive at Montgomery, I look at what we're doing with an early college high school model, which is funded differently, it's delivered differently, it's not based on credit hour, et cetera, and students are getting high school degrees and associate degrees at the same time. And to me, that's a disruptive model that we've embraced here at the college, and I can use a lot of his theory to ground that. But at the same time, we're doing a lot of things that aren't disruptive but are equally important to making us relevant. And that can be simple things like, you know, really strong academic program review processes and using technology to find out more about student pathways and the way that they're progressing through the institution. So, you know, I don't think we're necessarily past the disruptive moment. I do think that we're seeing a lot of disaggregation. Community colleges at one point he described as being the disruptors in higher education. I don't think we're that anymore. I think there's a lot of competition now in the space that we once served in, you know, kind of as the only sector. But that's my take on it.
Teresa Rowe, does disruption become a useful model for your purposes as a CIO, or is it something that others are throwing at you in terms of the responsibilities that you and your colleagues have to keep the infrastructure moving as technology has become ubiquitous?
I think the disruption model is very interesting to consider, both in terms of its impact outside the university, but also within the university. I look at it in terms of our current strategic planning. Our competition at Oakland University in Michigan may not be Michigan State or Grand Valley or even the local community college. Our competition may actually be non-consumption of an overly complicated and high-cost degree. Within IT, we've seen non-consumption of services, such as our telephone services, force us into changing how we did chargebacks and implement telephone architectures on our campus. So it does have an impact inside the university, but we have to be aware that competency-based discussions and adaptive learning discussions outside the university have a significant impact on IT infrastructures. It is a player in our strategic planning.
And Josh, Kim, let me tie the disruption notion back to the comments you made earlier about sort of where this conference is and how unconnected it seems to be to the larger realities and pressures of higher ed.
Sure. So I worry when Clay Christensen talks about disruption that that's a code word for cheap or inexpensive or always going to scale. And I think what would be truly disruptive is if we could figure out ways to invest more money in faculty. We could invest more money bringing more faculty so we can have smaller classes and more seminars. So I do kind of worry about all this talk about disruption.
And Scott, you watch this both in the context of the EDUCAUSE conference and beyond. Christensen has been a presence in the landscape for the last several years. Has that moment passed, or is that moment still with us in terms of the currency of that conversation?
Well, his invitation to EDUCAUSE and his reception there certainly shows that there's a healthy audience for him. I would have loved to have seen EDUCAUSE feature him versus Jill Lepore, who wrote that takedown in The New Yorker. And generally, I think EDUCAUSE would be better if we had more sessions where people disagreed politely with one another and actually hashed it out. But I'm with Josh there. I think disruption, it's hard to argue that there's not dramatic change in the economic model and the technology and everything in higher education. Of course, higher ed is being disrupted. But it really does become sort of a code word for let's do everything differently and not think about which parts of higher ed are inefficient and ineffective, but what parts of higher ed should be preserved. And I think sort of it can turn into a cheerleader for change for the sake of change, as opposed to remembering the doctor's oath of first do no harm.
So let's look at that a little more in terms of the dissonant voices. Scott, you talked about who wasn't there, and a large part of that seemed to be faculty, that the folks at EDUCAUSE, in one sense, are planning the environments, they're building or trying to sustain an infrastructure to serve faculty and to serve administrators. How well is that working out? Josh, you sort of straggle this in terms of your responsibilities at Dartmouth and also as you kind of view the landscape as a blogger for Inside Higher Ed.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been thinking about your campus computing project, wonderful presentation on Wednesday. And if I get this right, you showed some results that less than 1 in 10 of the CIOs or the folks that you surveyed think that they'll be bringing high-value systems, high-value ERPs or student information systems to the cloud by 2019. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and as I was listening to you say that, I was thinking, man, we really need presidents and provosts in the room because they're the ones who need to be pushing the CIOs to make this change so that we spend more of our money on mission, more on teaching and learning and on research, and less on administrative systems, precisely the kind of change of moving to the cloud that would enable. But they're not getting that push.
Karen Stout, in terms of where we're spending our money, a lot of it goes for administrative systems, a lot for instruction. Reference to Josh's point about my presentation, 83% of the CIOs that were part of my survey said their top priority for their institutions is the instructional integration, and yet when we look at the service infrastructure for that, user support, IT training for faculty, and IT training for students, those numbers are low, in some cases dismally low. I mean, in the context of the the role of technology at your institution as you talk with your presidential colleagues? Are we doing instructional integration well, or are we still struggling with it 3-4 decades into the so-called IT revolution in higher ed?
We're definitely still struggling with it, and you know, as I talked to my colleague presidents, they all are reaching out for ideas on simple things like just how to organize IT support. But the emergence of cloud technology, and I think Joshua's point about presidents being at the table to understand that and understand how that could really help drive down some of the infrastructure and administrative costs at our institutions is really, really important. You know, technology, this is more than just implementing a piece of technology. It's about adoption. And in order to have broad-scale adoption, the president has to be leading the charge, because adoption requires, a change in culture, a look at, every IT project as just a project. We can't do that anymore. It has to be around, how are we using this piece of technology to change culture? How are we using the technology to change the level of student engagement with our institution, whether it's, face-to-face, online, whatever, however that student is interacting with the institution? And then how do we leverage the investments? We, too often, I think, we buy pieces of technology, we implement them in a very siloed way, and most of these pieces of technology now have broad applicability across all many units, but instead the temptation is just to buy the next hot thing, implement it instead of adopt it in a siloed way, and we can't do that anymore. That's the way a president can help to drive down cost. I asked my CIO while we were at EDUCAUSE, okay, draw a map for me of student learning and show me all the tools that we have bought and what end we're trying to achieve with that tool. And when we mapped it out, there's a lot of efficiencies to be gained if we come up with a different kind of strategy and we look at the student first instead of the tool first.
Well, so Teresa Rowe, again, as a CIO, as our token CIO, if you will, this conversation seems to be less and less about technology, but to Karen's point, it's about change management. Are CIOs well-positioned to deal with the issue of change management, of culture, in terms of their responsibilities at institutions?
I think most CIOs are very well-prepared to even lead the discussion on change management, but I want to go back, too, about some of the early comments. Throughout my entire career in systems and information technology in higher ed, there has been a tension between enterprise computing and academic computing. And often the academic side felt, and we see the data continue to show, the services are reduced on the academic side, while the perception is that all the funding and support is going in on the enterprise side. And that contributes to this ongoing tension. When I look at this model in my own institution, I find that we are investing a lot in academic technologies, but the point about these being in silos such that one academic unit may not be aware of what another academic unit has, or not taking a cohesive university-wide view, is the real challenge. I would also say that moving to the cloud needs to be selective on the administrative side. As a CIO and looking at change, the cost of change is enormous. I've done two ERP systems, and the cost of making the change in both cases drained additional resources from other areas that were closer to the mission. So if we are going to look at moving our enterprise systems to the cloud, we need to do so in a way where we are fully understanding the cost of change that's an overhead, and make sure there's real cost savings. Right now, we've only changed those areas on enterprise where we can show that there's a real total project cost reduction, not just a software immediate cost, but the total project cost, including the change costs. That it's a big picture that really has to be addressed, and I love the idea of mapping out those technologies and understanding who the users are from a university-wide perspective.
I want to turn a little bit to the role of the exhibits. Karen, you mentioned it was very, very useful to be able to see a lot of this stuff laid out on the exhibit floor. Actually, it turns out about a third of the attendees at the conference represent technology providers. They are there either on the exhibit floor, they're in the suites, they're wandering around to either meet with their clients or to meet with new clients. I think particularly for individual IT officers and others from smaller institutions, the convenience of having all this stuff in one place as you begin to think about academic year planning can be incredibly convenient. On the other hand, many argue it sort of casts a large shadow over the tone and tenor of the conference. It's too large. It's too complex. There's too many bright and shiny objects to tempt us when we've got other priorities along the way. Josh, let me drop that one on you in terms of the exhibits and the role of the contribution to the exhibits as part of the conference experience.
Sure. Well, I love the vendor floor. It's a lot of fun. But I think we use poor learning theory when designing the vendor floor. And I think as EDUCAUSE, we should be using better learning theory. So that would mean rethinking the grouping and the geography of the exhibitors. So what I've written and what I've proposed is that the vendor floor be organized around the big problems that we face. I mean, the three big problems of cost, access, and quality. And then be able to navigate the vendor floor for how they're specifically addressing those issues. That way you'd get vendors are in the same space together. You might have different sorts of conversations. The vendors might hate this idea, but I think that's all right.
Scott, you talk with the vendors. The vendors in some ways are your clients at Inside Higher Ed, but you also cover this again from the perspective of a journalist. What's your take about the contribution of the vendor of the exhibit experience?
Well, it's clear a lot of people are there to see the vendors, and the vendors benefit from interacting with their clients, with their potential clients, and so forth. But there is, again, this huge disconnect between a cool new tool and what is its impact. I want to go back to, you know, Teresa raised the point about cost. I had a vendor ask me why I thought faculty were opposed to a tool that this vendor thought would save money. And I think the vendor was correct that this tool could save the college money. And I said, well, how many presidents have implemented that tool and simultaneously said, as a result of the savings, we're giving each academic department X dollars to advance its mission? And so where there are savings, I'm not sure the money is flowing to faculty or they're seeing it on the academic side. Likewise, again, to return to your survey highlighted the fact issue of training. And tools, without people who are trained to use them, you know, it doesn't matter how good the tool is. So again, you have this disconnect between let's get the latest cool thing and, well, will faculty and students actually be trained to use it?
Karen Stout, as a first-time attendee, you took your first walk on the EDUCAUSE exhibits floor. Was that a useful or an overwhelming experience?
My first time onto the floor was absolutely overwhelming. I did not stop at one vendor booth. I walked around and I had a list of the vendors that we do business with. So I kind of looked to where they were. And then I went into the Learning Theater, which was on the floor, and sat through what I think is a delivery mechanism that Joshua referred to. And essentially, the session was on competency-based education. There were a number of vendors that presented. Then there were respondents from the field, and there was a conversation then with the audience, and then the next vendor got up. I found that to be very effective, and it helped me then to go back out on to the vendor floor and have a little bit more confidence to interact individually with the vendors themselves. Around Scott's reference to faculty and costs and training, I agree with him around the training issue. I think faculty have, I call it the hidden commitment that kind of prohibits us from making change. And for faculty, I think they fear very much that a new tool, even if it's going to save money, and even if it came back to their area, will change the way that they work and disrupt their routine and perhaps be more difficult and challenging. So I think vendors placing more emphasis on the intuitive nature of the tool and the training for faculty and talking about, you know, that we'll get at that that hidden commitment that is a barrier to change for a lot of us when we bring new tools onto our campuses. We have a new tool we're using for advising right now. It's been widely adopted in a rapid way because it's really easy to use and it's intuitive and the faculty want more of it. It's also saving us money. And that's kind of the perfect blend.
Teresa, that seems to be sort of a really strong message. Faculty will respond when they see that it's in their own self-interest to do so. With so much of the technology that gets pushed or that becomes these kind of bright, shiny objects, glittering, it's not always clear how individual faculty will benefit or how it will benefit their students.
That is extremely important to focus on. I noted that the top four priorities from the Campus Computing Project survey were in the IT services category, and I left with the session with the idea that quality services enable the potential of information technology investments. So when I tour that vendor floor and I look at technology providers, I'm thinking about what's the service aspect that's required on my campus in order to fully achieve the potential of that information technology investment and make sure that we're getting the full return on that investment. That means that I need to be ready to assist faculty in identifying the right tool. I need to have staff members who can inform the faculty on best practices. We need to identify faculty champions who use a tool particularly well and bring this forward so that we can show students success as a result of using these tools. It's not just looking at the shiny objects, but when I tour the floor, I'm trying to tell that whole story that results in faculty being more effective, students learning better as a result, and the university perhaps being able to do this at a lower cost.
Scott, let me turn to you on this in terms of the context of the comments we just heard from Karen and from Teresa. Several years ago, Inside Higher Ed surveys of presidents and provosts asked explicitly, how do you evaluate the effectiveness of IT investments in a variety of different areas, teaching, online education, administrative systems, data and analytics? Those numbers were not great. And yet, we continue to do this. We continue to have great faith in the power and the potential of technology, and even the CIO numbers on the same items, while a little better, still weren't great. As you talk with presidents, as you wander these conferences, not just EDUCAUSE but others, you know, where do we need to go to get to that great feeling, a feeling of a great return on investment, great effectiveness for technology expenses and efforts?
Well, I think we need a more holistic approach. We need to be, for every investment we're making in technology, to saying, what was the specific goal of that in terms of student learning, in terms of the teaching process, and was it effective? Some of that is numbers. Some of that is watching what goes on in classroom. Some of that is surveying faculty on, do you use it or not? Why or why not? Then there's also the issue of rewards. I hear a lot of presidents who, particularly at traditional institutions, who will complain that faculty don't like technology or scared of using technology and so forth. I ask them two questions. One, I ask the training question, which we already referred to, but I also say, when was the last time you, in making a tenure decision, credited a person for creative use of a technology tool? Or in your speech, didn't just cite the person who won the NSF grant, but focused on a person who used technology well? I think faculty want and deserve real rewards for doing this well, and at institutions that just put this stuff down, don't evaluate and adjust, and don't reward, they shouldn't be surprised if they aren't moving the needle on student learning. It was interesting, in Karen's response, she's referring to how faculty members actually use tools. We need more emphasis on that as opposed to just here's, as someone said, a shiny new object.
Well, let me add a data point specifically about that. For a number of years on the Campus Computing Survey, we have asked IT officers if, in fact, technology can be part of the algorithm, part of the portfolio for review, advancement, tenure, and promotion. 1 in 5, at best, report that that's the case, whether it's a community college, a teaching school, liberal arts college or a research university. In one sense, we have made this ubiquitous. We have high expectations that faculty will use this, and at the same time, to your point and to Karen's point, we don't provide recognition and reward. Josh, I want to turn to you for a last comment. So going forward, you've been critical in some ways about what EDUCAUSE could do better. What could it do better as you think about the 2015 conference?
Sure, and I have to say that the reason that we can be critical of EDUCAUSE is because it really is like family, right? It's like going home for the holidays. We might be critical of it, but we keep going. And we should also say that the EDUCAUSE team has done an incredible job putting on a very professional, very well-run conference. And so that gives us the kind of room to critique, but we really should recognize the hard work they've done. But going forward, I think I would like to see some changes. I would like to see EDUCAUSE be more introspective and more self-critical and more critical about the profession, what technology has done to move the ball forward on the larger educational goals. I'd like to see what Scott talked about, more debate and more argument. And I think EDUCAUSE will move in that direction.
Great. I want to thank our panel, Joshua Kim at Dartmouth, Teresa Rowe at Oakland University, Karen Stout, president of Montgomery Community College, and Scott Jasek, co-founder and co-editor of Inside Higher Ed. That's our program for this week. This Week at Inside Higher Ed is available as an audio stream or podcast early afternoons on most Fridays. On the web, we are available at insidehighered.com/thisweek. Please share your thoughts about this week with us on the comments section of the webpage. Thank you.
Join us for the next edition of This Week at Inside Higher Ed. Funding for This Week is provided by 2U, ACT, Barnes & Noble College, Intel Corporation, Lumina Foundation, and Oracle. This Week at Inside Higher Ed is a production of G2 Education. Executive producer is Ginny Goldstein. Technical support is provided by Learning Times.